today, 96 dash, first case this afternoon, 96-2830 State v. Lechner. Representing Mr. Lechner is Craig Albee. Mr. Albee.
May it please the court, my name is Craig Albee. I represent the defendant, appellant Randy Lechner. Randy Lechner killed one person, but was punished as though he had killed two. That result defies common sense and the will of the legislature, and for that reason I'm asking this court to hold that in Wisconsin, a person who kills one person may only be convicted of one homicide. When I was a second-year law student, I was searching for a topic to do a law review article on, and it came to my attention that Professor Frank Remington was looking for a student to write an article on State versus Wolski. I read Wolski, and I was stunned by its holding that a person could be convicted of two homicides for one death. It seemed to me to be the most basic violation of the double jeopardy principle imaginable and completely contrary to common sense. I spent a lot of time talking with Professor Remington about the Wolski case, and I found some consolation, I suppose, in the fact that he seemed just as perplexed by the decision as I was. As his law review articles reflect, he was concerned that courts didn't do enough to ascertain legislative intent regarding multiple punishment. He was concerned that Blockberger was applied too routinely and that it was applied too strictly, and that this led to unfair results and allowed prosecutors to pile on multiple punishments that never were intended by the legislature. But I don't think Professor Remington or any of the other drafters of Wisconsin's criminal code ever envisioned a case as far out there as Wolski. And the reason for that is when Professor Remington and others drafted the criminal code, they recognized that Blockberger really is an imperfect tool for determining legislative intent regarding multiple punishment. And they included alternative definitions of lesser included offenses, recognizing that, in fairness, these closely related offenses also, there also must be a prohibition against multiple punishment for. One of those was 93966 sub 2, prohibiting multiple homicide convictions based on a single death. I have no doubt that the drafters of the criminal code thought that they had barred multiple homicide punishments for a single death when they enacted that statute. When a case like Wolski comes along that's so contrary to common sense and a fair reading of the statute, it undermines the predictability and clarity that the drafters of the criminal code sought. In the 10 years since I first read Wolski, I find it's still absurd. It's still as contrary to common sense as I thought it was when I originally read it. Intuitively, the case reaches the wrong result, and my research confirms that that's the case.
You want us, counsel, under 93966 sub 2, to read that as currently reads. Let me read it to you, if I may.
Sure.
A crime which is a less serious type of criminal homicide than the one charged. You want us to read that as less serious or equally serious. Isn't that your interpretation?
Well, I think the intent of the provision is that all multiple homicide punishments be barred.
Whether it's less serious class B and a class C felony, C being less serious than B, or two class B felonies, or as here, two class C felonies. And that's the problem that I have with your interpretation. Let me just finish, and then I need a response. Particularly in view of what's right after that, 2M, which reads, and I will read aloud as follows, a crime which is a less serious or equally serious type of battery than the one charged. I mean, the old argument is the legislature wanted to say it in sub 2. They couldn't because they knew how to say it. They said it in 2M. That's a real problem with your argument. Could you address it, please?
I think the original language in both those provisions dealing with battery and homicide was less serious. And I think that's a function of the fact that this is principally a lesser-included offense statute, and so that was the natural language to use, and no one ever considered the possibility of the statute being applied in this case. Now, moving on to 2M, when that was enacted in 1993, 40 years after the original criminal code, that was part of a comprehensive restructuring of the battery statutes. At the same time, the legislature enacted a number of new battery statutes which were overlapping in many respects. And someone caught the potential problem that would raise in 939-66 and took care of it at that time. But that Wisconsin Act, that's all the legislature did, was deal with battery. It wasn't an effort to deal with the lesser-included offense statute generally. It wasn't an attempt to deal with homicide statutes generally. And so the legislature didn't get around to doing it then.
There's something very attractive about your argument that you start out with, that the legislature could not have intended two homicide convictions for one death. I mean, there's something very appealing about that. But we ascertain legislative intent initially from the words of the statute. And when you look at 939-66 sub 2, they didn't say anything about equally serious, although they did N2M and they could have N2. So I look at the intent of that statute, and it seems to only cover lesser includes.
Well, I think if you backtrack 40 years to when the criminal code was enacted, that's where you see the legislative intent. And there's also the rule of statutory construction that we won't interpret a statute in a way that leads to absurd results. And the question the state can never answer in this case is why the legislature would want to allow multiple homicide punishments when the penalties happen to be equal, but not in any other case.
What's that question again?
The question is...
The state can answer it.
The question is, why would the legislature ever want that situation only in the case where the penalties happen to be equal, when they don't allow it in any other case? And there is no answer to that question. If we go back 40 years, as I said, to this court's holding in Ressler, I think Ressler is still good law, and I think it holds that we cannot have multiple homicide punishments upon one death. The drafters of the criminal code just a year later confirmed that they intended to restate existing law, which of course is Ressler. I've examined the committee minutes of the people who drafted the initial criminal code. There's no discussion in there whatsoever about what would happen if homicide penalties were equal. It's something that I believe just was never thought of. In the 30 years until Wolski was decided, there's no evidence that anyone prosecuted persons for multiple homicides based upon one death. And then I think another important source of legislative history is the article by Professors Dickey and Schultz, who were on the Judicial Council Committee on the Homicide Revision in the 1980s. And the view expressed there is that this issue just never came out. Nobody ever talked about what would happen if penalties were equal. There was lots of discussion during that time of, you know, should this homicide carry this penalty or that penalty, but nobody ever discussed this tangential problem of what if they're equal. And what Professor Dickey concludes in his article is that, quote, it would be incorrect and extremely unfortunate to rely merely on the fortuity that two offenses have the same penalty to conclude that multiple punishments are authorized. And the written views of persons involved in drafting legislation are considered authoritative statements of legislative intent. And I think that's a very strong argument in Mr. Lechner's favor here. The other bit of legislative intent that I think should be considered is when Wolski was decided, negligent vehicular homicide and intoxicated vehicular homicide had the same penalties. And so under Wolski, punishment for both was authorized. Then when they increased the penalty for intoxicated vehicular homicide to 10 years, now it under the state's view, permits multiple punishment for reckless homicide and intoxicated vehicular homicide. But there's no legislative history anywhere saying that when they changed the penalty, they intended to disallow the multiple punishments for negligent vehicular homicide and intoxicated vehicular homicide, and now allow it for reckless.
Just for clarification, Wolski had both Class D felonies at the time. Is that correct?
That's correct. And there's no showing. And in logically, if we want to have convictions for both intoxicated vehicular homicide and reckless, we'd also want them for intoxicated vehicular homicide and negligent vehicular homicide. The same logic would apply in both cases. But we don't have that, and that's because the legislature never intended to allow multiple punishments for a single homicide. I think that's just common sense. And if the legislature had intended this dubious and I think very novel practice of allowing multiple homicide punishments, I think there would definitely be some expression of that intent somewhere in the legislative history. But I think everyone in this court knows that OWI statutes are probably as hotly debated as any other in front of the legislature. I've never seen a word in a newspaper about somebody saying, you know what we should really do to get tough on OWIs is allow multiple homicide convictions.
Let me ask you something I've been thinking about, and I don't know if there are any of the homicide charges this would apply to, but I was trying to think of two homicide charges that were equal in penalty, side by side, that might both have the same lesser included below. Can you think of anything like that? Because I think that might demonstrate your point, which is if there was a lesser included of, you know, if there was a lesser included of homicide by intoxicated user and intentional or reckless driving, reckless homicide, and if there were a lesser included, you could have two convictions for the same homicide with the same charges.
Well,
and obviously that wouldn't work. But I don't know if there are any such charges in our
We would have that in this case. It's something I had thought of, one of the problems that would arise. Here we had a charge of second-degree reckless and also a charge of intoxicated vehicular homicide. I think negligent vehicular homicide could be a lesser included of both of those offenses.
So in the theory, the jury then could, if you submit it to a jury, they could find lesser included and come up with potentially two charges identical to each other for the same one death.
That's very true, and an issue that I haven't raised that I don't think is one of the primary issues here, but it would be the amount of jury confusion in trying to instruct on these kind of things, especially when you start taking into account lesser included. I think it's almost impossible to instruct a jury properly, and that's partly because this is, I think, beyond common sense. As to the appropriateness of multiple punishment, I think Wolski was just dead wrong on that. What triggers the severe punishments involved in both of these instances is death. The case I cited from Indiana, Dawson, as well as some cases from other jurisdictions, provide that in a case like this, for instance, you could convict Mr. Lechner of second-degree reckless as well as a simple OWI, but you shouldn't be able to hit him up twice for the severe punishment that accompanies a death twice. And I think that makes a lot of sense as well. While I have not argued in the briefs that these statutes fall within Blackburger, this court has said in the past that driving while intoxicated is recklessness per se. And I think that could be a basis for finding even that these offenses do meet the Blackburger test and be another reason for finding in Mr. Lechner's favor. I believe that this court's decision in Robbie is persuasive, in which the court said that the number of convictions should be equal to the number of victims. And in this case, there's one victim, and there should only be one homicide conviction. One other principle that Professor Remington was very concerned about is the rule of strict construction. because this is not really just a double jeopardy problem. One of the interests that should be protected is separation of powers. And unless the legislature has clearly and unequivocally provided for multiple punishments, this court risks usurpation of the legislator's authority.
Well, if you apply the Blackburger test, that's a result that you reach, isn't it? I mean, under the additional elements test, and I'm reading here from Wolski, if each statutory crime requires proof of fact for conviction which the other does not require, Blackburger, then it can be said that the legislature has intended to promulgate separate, distinct offenses providing for multiple convictions and punishments. And that's what Wolski is.
Well, I think the criminal code recognizes that, as I said before, Blackburger is an imperfect tool, and so it's adopted these alternative definitions. I disagree wholeheartedly with the state's contention that Blackburger is the first part of the test. I think it's 939-66 in its entirety. Blackburger is neither constitutionally nor statutorily required. It's been one of the methods that's been used by this court for a long time, but there's nothing that requires that test. I would submit, I think any methodology that permits convictions for multiple homicides for a single death, that there's something wrong with the methodology.
Well, then you must be suggesting that we get rid of Blackburger, because Blackburger says if you have different elements, the legislature intends... Well, the theory behind Blackburger is if you have different elements, the legislature intended that those crimes as separate and distinct crimes.
Well, that's one basis. I mean, there's also sub 2, which I think is... Wolski applied the wrong test. Sub 2 is the right test when you're talking about homicides.
You've got problems with sub 2 because of the language of sub 2. It by its words, only deals with lesser included. Less serious, I guess, is the word I can't remember.
And all I can say is I respectfully disagree. I think that the provision is ambiguous and that no presumption arises against Mr. Lechner as a result. If there is a presumption, the legislative history easily overcomes that presumption. When we look to the 40 years of legislative history on homicide...
Well, before we get to the legislative history, what is it about this sentence, a phrase, a crime which is a less serious type of criminal homicide than the one charged, that's sub 2. What is it that's ambiguous about that phrase?
Yeah, I think it's the context, because I think we need to understand that this is primarily a lesser included offense statute, and that's the basis for the phrasing. I think there's something intuitively wrong about interpreting the statute in that way, and because there is no answer to why the legislature would intend to allow multiple punishments if they happen to be equal penalties, I think it is ambiguous, and we can look to other methods of legislative intent. I also, maybe this is a good time to point out, I think there is a basis for finding that intoxicated vehicular homicide does carry a more serious penalty, because it carries a 5-year license revocation that does not accompany a conviction for second-degree reckless, and it also carries a minimum $250 fine, essentially, if a fine is imposed, and increases the maximum fine to $10,250, and that assessment, that surcharge, is not available in second-degree reckless.
Now, Mr. Aldi, how do we get around at least we pay lip service to a rule of construction when we are attempting to discern legislative intent, that we presume that the legislature is aware of its own enactments and our case law, and although your argument would have been, you know, that at one time one of these was less serious, when the legislature decided to get tough on intoxicated drivers, they were well aware of the effect it would have by raising it to 10 years and therefore simply left the statute alone.
I think that's addressed by Professor Dickey's article, which is, he was on that Judicial Council Committee. He knows this was never considered.
Does his article say that?
Yeah, I think it does. Let's take a look at my notes. what he said is that he thinks it is safe to say no one would have ever anticipated this result prior to Wilski, and that despite lots of discussion about possible penalties, there's no discussion about the possibility of two homicides for one death. And I think if we're...
I've gone through and made a list, or tried to make an encompassing list of the various homicide statutes. Is there any other two homicides that could possibly fall into this category?
I believe first degree reckless and felony murder may fall in that category. I also believe that felony
murder just calls for in any case 20 years, doesn't it?
That's correct. And if felony murder is combined with a felony that carries 20 years, then it would be the equivalent of the 40.
So, any others that would fall under these two?
I believe there is one other Class B homicide statute that falls in that category.
Second degree intentional?
First degree reckless and second degree intentional. That's what I'm trying to reach for, yeah.
But then, aren't they knocked out by sub 1 of 93966?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. And the other example is negligent control of a vicious animal and second degree reckless, those also. And I think it's clear the legislature didn't intend to double up on people with negligent control of a vicious animal that causes homicide and second degree reckless. It's just a more specific form of reckless, which I think intoxicated vehicular homicide is also. Thank you.
Really? May it please the court, I'm Assistant Attorney General Sharon Rooley, and I'm appearing on behalf of the state of Wisconsin, the plaintiff respondent in this case. On December 4th, 1994, Mr. Lechner chose to drive drunk, and he chose to drive recklessly, speeding and passing in a no-passing zone. As a result, he cut back into traffic not once, not twice, but three times, and he again entered the oncoming traffic lane, colliding with the Penny's car and killing a 7-year-old child. This issue involves two questions of multiplicity, the two homicides with which the first part of this argument has been concerned, and two counts of reckless endangerment in addition to the reckless homicide. With regard to the first issue, the two homicides, the state would ask this court to hold that the legislature intended multiple punishments under 940.06 and 940.09 for the single death. This holding is consistent with this court's prior applications of the two-prong test for multiplicity, and it is consistent with prior approaches of this court that have defined seriousness principally in terms of the penalty structure in 939.50 or the terms of imprisonment set forth in the substantive statute. With regard to issue two, the state would ask this court to hold that a guilty or no contest plea to separate violations of the same statute disposes of any multiplicity claim that the charges were not different in fact. In looking at the first issue, the two homicide charges, the question is whether the legislature intended separate punishments for the defendant's violation of the two statutory provisions. And consistent with this court's long history in dealing with multiplicity claims, we begin with the presumption that the legislature intended separate punishments. We begin with that presumption because each of the statutes in question contains an element that the other does not, and the defense is not contesting that point. There's nothing to overcome that presumption. There's certainly nothing in the plain language of Section 939.66 sub 2 that would overcome that presumption. And contrary to the defendant's contention, we believe that there is nothing in legislative intent to overcome that presumption. The defense points to State versus Ressler as a situation predating the code in which two homicides were disallowed. Ressler, however, involved intoxicated homicide and negligent homicide, and at the time that Ressler was decided, the negligent homicide carried the less serious penalty, and both of those two subsections were part of the same section. So, to the extent that the legislature said that they intended to continue prior practice, there would be nothing inconsistent in the present case with holding that two offenses of the same level of seriousness would justify two counts of homicide. Rather, this presumption is supported by the legislative history and the interests that are protected. As was pointed out in the questions to defense counsel, there has been no amendment to 93966 sub 2. The criminal code is now virtually a decade old. The Walski decision is now virtually a decade old. The legislature has shown in its amendment to the battery statute, and the battery statute originally, the battery subsection of 93966 originally read the same way that the current homicide provision reads, less serious forms of battery. The legislature amended that section, and the state isn't suggesting that when the legislature amended the battery section, they necessarily should have gone ahead and amended the homicide section of 93966. The state is merely saying that by amending the battery section, we have indication that the legislature knows how to amend 93966 to achieve its goals. So despite the opportunities, despite the 10-year period of time between Wolski and the enactment of the code, there has been no amendment to 93966 sub 2. Also supporting the presumption that the legislature intended two separate punishments is the fact that the two statutes protect separate interests. The intoxicated user protects the citizens of the state of Wisconsin from having intoxicated drivers that might create fatal harm. The reckless homicide statute protects Wisconsin citizens against the reckless driver. Together, a reckless driver, who is also a drunk driver, presents a kind of synergistic effect. The person who is drunk but cautious may ultimately kill someone. The person who is reckless but not drunk may ultimately kill someone. But when the person who is drunk is also reckless, that person is driving in a kind of condition and in a kind of mode that prevents maybe that last-minute chance to swerve or take evasive action. This situation is basically no different from the situation that was presented to the court in State versus Sauceda. In State versus Sauceda, this court held that two separate subsections of the same statute permitted multiple punishments for a single sexual contact. The defendant was separately punished for contact with a victim under 16 and contact with an unconscious victim. If this court were to hold that the two homicides in the present case were somehow precluded, they would have to cut back on the language or the holding in State versus Sauceda.
Counsel, I know that you are going through the arguments and steps, but I'd like you to respond in a brief fashion to this. Your opposing counsel makes the argument that it doesn't make sense to have two convictions for one death, two homicide convictions for one death. Why is he wrong?
I think he's wrong for the following reason. We have the legislature saying that they do intend to crack down on drunken drivers. And I looked through the statutes, and there are, as was indicated, there are other statutes at the same level of seriousness. But the way those statutes mesh, they don't mesh the same way that the two statutes go together. In other words, there's a certain area of behavior. A person who is engaged in drunken driving of a vehicle, like the person who is engaged dealing with a vicious animal,
is engaged in a kind of activity that in itself becomes dangerous. When on top of that the person chooses to be reckless with that drunken driving, then that creates an additional risk. Granted, there's only one death, but the interests that are being protected.
So that's what the legislature intended to protect, different interests, is
correct.
That your response to?
Yes. I think at the bottom line, that's what allows this to make sense. And that, after all, the legislative intent is the basis in what we're looking for here. And we begin with the presumption that the legislature did intend the two homicides, and certainly the two separate interests support that presumption.
And the interests, again, are?
To protect the citizens of Wisconsin from the reckless driver, and to protect the citizens of Wisconsin from the drunken driver. I would like to briefly address the question of whether or not the two offenses are at the same level of seriousness. By Wisconsin law, revocation and driver surcharge are not considered punishments. And even if they were considered punishments in some context, that kind of punishment, and I'll put that in quotation marks, has never been used to interpret levels of seriousness for purposes of 93966. It wasn't in the Dickey article that was discussed. That article cites two cases, State versus Davis and State versus Harris, which tried to determine whether or not and how felony murder fell within the scheme, since felony murder sets a penalty in addition to the underlying felony. And in those cases, they never looked beyond the penalty that was in the substantive statute and the penalty as referred to in 93950 for the statute with which they were comparing. To do so, to go outside and to look at the revocation and to look at driver surcharge assessments, would open a whole set of problems and make it virtually impossible, I think, to determine levels of seriousness. As the legislature puts more and more surcharges, victim surcharges, domestic violence surcharges on different crimes, to look beyond the statutory schema that's set forth in 93950 and the following two statutes, or in the substantive statute itself, is simply to create an impossible situation to determine the levels of seriousness. I believe a question was asked whether or not the two offenses would come down to a single lesser included offense, and the possibility that was posed was negligent vehicular homicide. I'll have to admit that I've not researched this, and when I lay out the homicide charges, I get a little dizzy and tentative. But it seems to me, given the nature of the homicide by intoxicated user, which does not require scienter, that to have a negligent vehicular homicide, I don't see how that could be a lesser included offense. I say that tentatively, however, without having done a detailed analysis of how those statutes.
You understand my concern. I mean, I'm looking at this statute of lesser included. I mean, the issue of lesser included normally arises in the context of jury trials and what, if anything, might be appropriate to submit to the jury. I think we all understand that you will not be convicted of the higher offense and the lower offense. And so there's never a discussion of an equal offense, because the state picks the strongest of its charges, and that's what it proceeds on, so you don't have these two charges. And so I was just trying to determine whether any of these homicide charges, if you went down the list of lesser included, you'd wind up with equal offenses, in which case it would seem to give some support to the petitioner's position here that the legislature didn't intend to do that. But the lesser included area is such a maze, it's very difficult to sort of think of examples.
I think, and the answer to this might be in the jury instruction. This is the bridging instruction for first-degree intentional self-defense, second-degree intentional homicide, first-degree reckless. It's jury instruction 1016. And the only time where something like that might exist would be going down from first degree intentional, and then I guess it's really not what you're concerned with, because when you go down from first degree intentional, you get a series of class, you have two class B felonies that are the same, second degree intentional and first degree reckless. But there would never be a chance there of conviction on both, because the kinds of things that would mitigate down to the second degree intentional would not permit then the reckless to be submitted. So I guess that really wasn't what you were asking, and I can't think of a situation.
You understand what I was trying to do was trying to see whether this might lead to results that would make absolutely no sense, that you could be convicted of two homicide charges side by side for the same death, but their lesser includes would wind up being equal, and obviously you wouldn't have two identical charges for one death.
In terms of the two offenses that we're concerned with now, I don't think there's one, and I'm fairly confident, but not at 100% certainty, that it would not be negligent for hit or homicide. That would not be the case. The defendant refers to a separation of powers problem here, and it seems to me, given the presumption of legislative intent, and given that the legislature has spoken in 939-66 sub 2 that we're talking about less serious degrees of homicide, that it might be an invasion on the legislature's province to interpret that subsection differently than its plain language would suggest. And I'd also note that that's not the only subsection in 939-66 that refers to less serious offenses. 939-66-2R, a crime which is a less serious type of violation under 943-23 than the one charged, and that's the carjacking statute. So any interpretation of less serious really means equally serious too would have implications beyond the statute that we're considering here. If there are no...
I have one. Can you point to any specific legislative history or any statement in the legislative history that would indicate that the legislature knew what it was doing when it increased the penalty for intoxicated use to the 10 years with respect to sub 2?
Not with respect to sub 2, but the legislative statement when it increased the penalty, the statement indicating that its purpose was to be tough on drunk drivers would suggest that they might not have wanted to engage in doing anything differently with sub 2, so that they would provide the courts with it and the prosecutors with the chance of going for both the second degree reckless and the intoxicated user. So I find in that statement that says, and I believe we quote it in our brief, that the intent for raising the penalty is to become tough on drunk drivers. If there are no further questions with
me... Let me ask you, I'm just looking at this carjacking statute, and this question may make no sense because it's kind of off the top of my head, but trying to work through these. The 2R, the provision on 2R that you reference refers to the carjacking, which is contained at 943.23. And under 1G, the elements of that offense are whoever, while possessing a dangerous weapon and by the use or threat of use of force or the weapon against another, intentionally takes any vehicle without the consent of the owner, is guilty of a Class B felony. Is it your position, then, that one could be convicted of that offense and armed robbery simultaneously?
And armed robbery?
Yes. It seems to me that the elements that and I'm doing this off the top of my head, but the armed robbery, I believe, is a Class B felony, and the elements look pretty close, while possessing a dangerous weapon and the use of threat of use of a weapon, intentionally take here its vehicle, there its property.
I don't think that you would need to resort to 939-66 to determine that, because what you're addressing deals with a violation under 943-23 and the armed robbery statute, which would be a separate statute. So the analysis would be...
Well, you've got two homicide charges here, and here I'm doing a armed robbery charge and a carjacking charge.
Right, but with the armed robbery and the carjacking, you'd start off with the Blockberger analysis, and if each of the two felonies had an element that the other did not,
one is a vehicle, one is property.
Then you'd have so. If they passed Blockberger, it would set up the legislative. The presumption that the legislature intended.
So the result would be the same, if assuming there were different elements, that you said that and I don't know if a vehicle is different than property. I mean, we don't have to answer that question today. You could be convicted of both.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the end of the question.
If we assume for purpose of this discussion that a vehicle is different than a property, that those elements are different, it looks like all the other elements are the same. One requires a vehicle, one recovers property. If we assume that those are the same, then under that analysis, you could be convicted of both crimes for the one event.
If we assume that each element requires vehicle, one requires property,
and let's assume that we say those are different. I don't know if they are
right.
or not, but then you'd be convicted of both for...
Right, but not by virtue of 93966. That would simply be by virtue of the two-part.
Well, I'm saying 93966 doesn't take you out of it because it has to be a less serious in order to be a lesser included.
Right, but it's talking about a less serious form of carjacking rather than the two offenses.
Right, okay, thank you.
Can you think of any other two homicide charges that could legitimately be charged for one death?
Possibly reckless and...
Second degree reckless
and negligent control of a vicious animal.
Possibly.
I think that's less likely.
What is it?
I think because you have the negligence under the recklessness that there'd be a different analysis.
You don't think that's an included crime? You don't think that
included crime? It could possibly... No, unless... I'm not sure. Those would be... I guess I would have to sit down with the elements and look at them. But in terms of 93966 sub 2, they exist at the same level.
And the carjacking, there is no two class B felonies, are there?
Not that I see in looking at the statute.
Can you think of any example anywhere else that can happen?
Where?
In the criminal law? This anomaly we have here where you have two kinds of crimes, I mean, whether it be homicide, with identical penalties, that you could have a double conviction for one homicide or one... Fill in the blank.
The closest analogy, and I believe there were two degrees of sexual assault, but the closest analogy is Sauceda. And certainly if it makes sense in Sauceda, it would seem to make sense here.
Thank you.
Counsel, let's turn to the third question that's certified. That is the recklessly endangering safety issue. One of my concerns is, here we have a half mile and 30 seconds, and from that, the defense argues it's a continuing course of conduct, and it should be one offense, and you suggest that you look at the victims, and there is more than one victim. You charged two victims, and therefore two offenses. I'm going to capsulize my understanding of the arguments. But one of my concerns is, okay, you have two cars that were putting on brakes. What if you had a long line of cars with a long line of unidentified drivers, as we have here, and 15 cars put on brakes, and you had a Jeff Martin who was at the tail end who could say, I saw 15 cars in front of me, and they all had to slow down, ergo, I assume, had to brake. Would you have 15 charges of recklessly endangering?
It's the state's position that would support 15 charges of reckless endangering. However, the court need not go that far in this case, because what we have here is observation of separate volitional acts on the part of the defendant.
of his cutting in and someone having to break, of his cutting in again and someone having to break, of his crossing the center line and his colliding. So we have three separate volitional acts, and to look at the volitional acts, even apart from the victims, is consistent with prior Wisconsin law. However, if part of the problem that you're suggesting is all we've got is Jeff Martin saying, I saw 15 people have to put on their brakes, then I think that that becomes a situation where the defendant can take that to trial and challenge Jeff Martin and challenge the sufficiency of the evidence as to each one of those victims.
But your theory that you're advancing here, or your argument that you're advancing, is that there can be 15 separate charges because allegedly there would be 15 separate victims who were recklessly endangered because someone pulled in front.
Right. That's the state's position, although the court need not go that far.
Even if there were not separate volitional acts, as you describe them, there's just one pulling in front, but 15 cars had to slow down.
Right. I think that that would be a harder case for the state to prove. And one of the reasons that the state is advocating the guilty plea waiver in this particular situation is that the defendant, by pleading no contest, essentially was saying, I agree, state, the state could prove each of these separate charges. He was admitting to the state's ability. He wasn't admitting that he did it. He didn't plead guilty. But he was pleading to the state's ability to prove each of those separate offenses. And I guess that does take me into the second argument and probably covers the most important part. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Albee?
First, I want to quickly respond to Justice Geske's questions regarding negligent vehicular homicide being a lesser included. Clearly it is. I don't know how somebody could argue it's not potentially a lesser included of intoxicated vehicular homicide. I've had a number of cases with, say, a situation where someone goes through a stop sign, hits another car, and kills someone, and there's an issue as to whether the person's intoxicated or not. Intoxicated vehicular homicide is the first charge, and then the state will ask for a lesser included on negligent in case the jury finds that the person wasn't intoxicated, but nonetheless was negligent for going through the stop sign. Similarly, in that same instance, if the person was going at a very fast speed, they could have been charged with second-degree reckless in the first place, and the state would ask for a lesser included in case they found only negligence and not recklessness. So I think that's easily taken care of.
Counsel,
this is not my forte,
but you've given a fact situation where the operating while intoxicated driver was also driving in a reckless fashion, but you may not always have that. So if you look at just the elements, I mean, a person who causes the death of another by operation of a vehicle while under the influence of an intoxicant makes no reference to any negligence, makes no reference to any recklessness, so I'm not sure it's necessarily a lesser included.
Well, it is because of 93966 sub 2, which says a less serious homicide is an included crime. So that provides the notice to the defendant, and the state can ask for that as a lesser included offense, assuming that there's some factual basis for asking for that charge. And further, this court has said on past occasions that driving while intoxicated is negligence per se and recklessness per se. And I think you could also find negligence, I haven't seen this application yet, but I'm waiting. If someone, let's say, has a .06 BAC, that the state will say, well, that's not intoxicated, but that's negligent to drive at that level of with alcohol consumption. So I think that's possible. But I think the state's argument boils down to is we should be allowed to do this because we're going to get tough on drunk drivers. And that's fine as a policy matter. I don't have any dispute about getting tough on drunk drivers. But if the legislature wants to do that, the way to do it is to increase the penalty from 10 years to 20 years or 10 years to 40 years as has been discussed. And not to go through these machinations about you know, because the penalties happen to be equal, you can double up.
Council, the legislature can do it any way it wants to do it.
That's true, but as I talked about earlier, I think if the legislature wanted to do it in this sort of backdoor method, that there'd be some expression of that somewhere. Some legislator somewhere would have said, let's do it this way now. Further, Wolski allowed negligent vehicular homicide and intoxicated vehicular homicide. That no longer is permissible under the statute or under the reasoning of the Court of Appeals decision in Buck. Why do we not allow it in that case now if the legislature's intent was to get tough on drunk drivers? It's a mere fortuity, as Professor Dickey expressed it, that the penalties happen to be the same now for second-degree reckless and intoxicated vehicular homicide. And the legislature's never expressed an intent to allow that. To the contrary, 40 years of history suggests that they endeavor to prohibit that result.
Could you respond to the waiver argument of the state?
I think that's pretty well covered in the brief. I don't have anything additional to that. But one, I think the state waived that. Two, I think Mr. Lechner was entitled to rely on this court's decision in State versus Morris. Three, even under the United States Supreme Court cases that suggest the possibility of waiver, there is no waiver if the issue can be determined on the record, and in this case it can be determined on the record. I think in the interest of justice, this court can hear the issue. It's been briefed. It's here. I can't think of any reason why waiver should lie in this case. Mr. Lechner raised these issues before he pled. The trial court disagreed with his position that it was multiplicitous. Where is he supposed to go? I think it would be terrible public policy to require interlocutory appeals and people to go to trial.
Thank you. Mr. Albee. Court is adjourned until its March sitting.